When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Good morning and good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Marvel Movie Talk right here on Geekscape. Very excited to revisit the character of the Hulk. As always, I am Christian Blatt. With me is Michael X. Shirley.
You're going to have to pay soon.
Not me. I'll be all threads all the time if I have to pay for X. I'm not that worried about it. But in any case, you've got the X, so you should be grandfathered in for free.
I know. Right?
Now, a few weeks ago on this show, we did an episode where, for the first time, I was watching The Angry Hulk.
What? That was your first watch?
It was the whole point, yes, that I had never seen it.
Wow. Yeah.
I had never seen it because it had been accurately described to me what the movie was like. And then I saw the movie and I'm like, yep, that's why I didn't see it. But I did that for you, our Geekscape friends, our Marvel Movie Talk audience. I saw that movie for the first time. It came on the heels of my first watch of Elektra. By the way, I don't think I have any more that I haven't seen now. I think those were the two, even Marvel adjacent shows. That doesn't mean that we won't one day do an episode on the Roger Corman Fantastic Four. there's plenty of shows that we can visit. And I'll tease an announcement for the end of the show.
Ooh.
This is not our last trip into the world of the Hulk, but stay tuned for that. So, yeah, I had seen The Incredible Hulk. Apparently, it was 2008. In my mind, it was 2011. This movie's older than I thought it was. But the internet didn't lie to me, at least this time. Somebody's Twitter was lying to me earlier today, giving me farcical information. But in this case, the internet did not lie. I remembered seeing the movie. Now, we have to have a starting point for this movie. Generally, I like Ed Norton in movies. I think Fight Club is great. You got American History X. There's a movie called The Score with him and Robert De Niro. And I guess the Pillsbury Doughboy impersonating one of the greatest actors of our lifetime. In Amumu, we have a great actor, Marlon Brando. But you wouldn't know that he was acting in this movie. But anyway, in general, I like him. So I have to start with that first. Do you like Ed Norton in other movies, Michael?
Yeah, for sure.
It's an important starting point because I have people that I don't like no matter what it is. You put Kristen Chenoweth in anything, I'm not going to enjoy it. It doesn't matter what it is.
Okay. Yeah.
There might be a backstory there for another time. But, you know, sometimes you just look, everybody has those people. Sometimes it's like you see them in one thing and you're like, you know, I can't watch a movie where Vin Diesel's in it because I look at him and I'm like, that's Vin Diesel. My name's Dom. No, you're Vin Diesel. You can't fool me. You're not doing anything else. That's why I like Tony Danza, because Tony Danza, every character he plays on TV is named Tony. He's like, yeah, you're a Tony. You know, but all right. So in general, you have liked him. Now, when you went into this movie, I assume this was back in a time when you would see movies in the theater.
Yes,
Michael. So were you excited for this one?
I've never been like a huge Hulk person.
Sure.
But
well, not this Hulk, brother.
Yeah. You got
Terry.
Me there.
Terry, on the other hand, you're
he's the only Hulk in my heart. when I went to see it was just because, you know, I'm such a huge Marvel fan. That was the impetus for that.
By the way, speaking of Terry Hogan, he is very close right there, brother. Our friend Eric Connor joining us now from the Hulk bunker somewhere in an undisclosed location. In any case, so Michael was just kind of explaining he was never really a Hulk person, but you'd enjoyed the Eric Bana one enough that you're like, oh, I'll go see another Hulk movie. Is that the case?
Well, I was very curious as to what was so wrong with, well, that might not be the best way to put it. I was curious as to why they would reboot a movie so quickly.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, because you're on record how you feel about reboots and recasts and whatnot.
Oh,
you think Tobey Maguire should still be playing Spider-Man in his movies?
Yeah,
Grandpa Spider-Man.
No, he still wants Japanese. He still wants Japanese Spider-Man. Actually,
oh, I do too. Yeah, all right. Well, he's a purist. So, Eric, we sort of recapped the audience that we did our recent episode about the Ang Lee Hulk, and now we are doing, as promised in that episode, we're doing the 2008 Hulk that I thought came out in 2011. Boy, is my face green. In any case, heading into this movie, I did see this movie in the theaters. I did go see it when it came out. You know, it came out like a month after Iron Man, the first Iron Man. So I was hyped up for more Marvel movies. I didn't even think about not going to see this. What did you think, Eric?
Oh, totally the same. You know, anytime a Marvel movie is coming out, it's not a question of like, will I go? I'll go. Like at this point, particularly MCU. Though I did not see Elektra in the theaters. But beyond that, like even outside the MCU, I don't know if there's been any Marvel movies I missed the chance to see in the big screen. But it's funny, like you're talking about timeline, right? And it's like, I've mentioned previously, right? I know this came out the same time as Iron Man because of the Comic-Con panel, you know, which had them together. But in terms of what year, the fact that, wow, this is now 15 years old, that's the part that's still, it's kind of getting my head around. And I'm sorry, how many years after the previous Hulk was this?
It's 5 years. So that one was 2003.
Yeah. And Michael, it's a good point. It's like, it's really strange. And I know they were trying to build an MCU thing. And in some ways, like you could maybe make an argument, it's not a reboot necessarily, but just an actual sequel.
But yeah, well, let me interject on that for a moment, because there are some ways that it clearly pulls on some of the threads from the Ang Lee Hulk. But I would say it's just as much of a continuation in the universe of the TV series as it is for the movie. Mm-hmm. You know, there's allusions to things that are not directly in the Ang Lee Hulk. And they said that I guess the way that they spoke about it at the time was, well, it's kind of a reboot and it's kind of a sequel. And they were trying to get the term requel to catch on. And Michael, you'll be glad to know that didn't catch on.
Side effects of requel may include gas. Yeah.
Please see a doctor if you're
gamma radiation.
Yeah, if it persists. And so, yeah, it's, and there is kind of that sequence in the beginning of this movie, which, Michael, I know you found difficult to watch. The kind of recap of, like, previously on The Incredible Hulk. Except it was actually, yeah. Well, it also, and some of those shots that are in there match up with the opening of the TV series, by the way, the shots of him in the chair and stuff like that. So there are a lot of nods to the TV series, and we'll talk a little bit about it as we go along. So you found that recap to be enough that you had to actually walk away from the movie for a little while, correct?
Yes, I tried to watch this movie on Monday night, and I literally, by the time the credits were over, I was like, nope, turned it off. Like, I think it's probably the worst opening credit scene I've ever seen in my entire life.
Hmm.
I hated it. It's so cheesy. It like it it's confusing because it makes you feel like you missed something from the Eric Bana Hulk. Like
you don't remember this scene?
Yeah, like I don't remember him beating the crap out of Betty Ross. Like I'm like
and this, and lots of like acting to camera, which I was like,
yeah.
Yeah. Like William Hurt is a freaking national treasure. Was
yeah.
They made him look terrible in that opening credits. Like
yeah.
It's like they used all the worst takes he will ever put on any celluloid, and they used them all.
Yeah, Daniel, our pal Daniel Drew in the chat. He says, "I assume that the Ang Lee Hulk was just made and wasn't supposed to be anything beyond that, and then the plans for the MCU started after that point. It's just happenstance that it was soon after." That's not entirely true. There was a plan to do a sequel. Ang Lee was not going to direct it.
This was supposed to be the sequel,
right? This is part of that development process. It was going to have the Abomination in it. There were a few other different incarnations of it. There was a version by the time that Ed Norton comes along, Rick Jones was supposed to have been in the movie, and he got rid of Rick Jones entirely because you know, I alluded to Marlon Brando a short time ago. Ed Norton is another one of those guys who's gonna, you know, if you want him in your movie, you're gonna have to deal with him handing in new script pages. And you know, he was actually hired to do a rewrite on it, so
yeah.
That immediately, you know, probably should send up some, you know, some red flags towards everybody involved. It's like, oh, so the actor is, Tyler Durden wants a rewrite on this.
Christian, do you have the, I could bring it up.
Well, no, I've got it. Yeah.
Okay. The Zach Penn commentary on Ed Norton's work.
Yeah. Yeah, so Zach Penn was hired, and he did a rewrite on it. I think. Well, no, he did an initial draft and a rewrite. My apologies. I think
he might be credited. Is he credited as the solo writer on this? Actually,
I'll let you look that up while I read. I will. This. How about that? That's a team working together. Teamwork makes the dream work. So, according to Zach Penn, the fallout prevented me from collaborating with Norton during production. I don't really know him. He has his own process. He chose to do it the way he wanted to do it. That said, I kept in touch with the people making the movie, but he, you know, has his own particular way of working, and it was unusual. I really don't know. I wasn't there. I was off making another movie, so it wasn't a situation where I was banging on the door saying, let me come to set. Let me just stop with the quote for a moment. The writer of a movie is very often nowhere near production. Sometimes they're allowed on set as a courtesy. Other times they're told thanks, but no thanks. It was disappointing. I won't deny it. Zach Penn continuing. I wasn't happy with him coming to Comic-Con saying he wrote the script. I can't tell you that made me go back and watch Fight Club. So yeah. But so is who's listed as screenwriter?
Just him. Yeah, Zach Penn.
Just Zach Penn. Yeah, that's a WGA rule. A lot of times there have to be they have arbitrations and hearings on who gets credited, the amount of rewrites. So it sounds to me that Ed Norton didn't, you know, put as much of a polish on it as he's trying to say. But it does sound
add a little to that.
Go ahead.
Edward Norton wrote a good deal of the script, but he was so unhappy with how that was translated to screen. They pulled it off.
Right. Right. Exactly. So, and I think that in general, Kevin Feige supposedly liked Norton in the role because he reminded him of Bill Bixby. Now, what I will say is it is something you have to keep in mind when you cast some of these characters. I think that, you know, in some cases, there are actors who played Batman that I stand by the fact that I don't think Christian Bale is a very good Bruce Wayne. And I really don't think that Sparkle Twilight Boy is a good Bruce Wayne. Like, not at all. For me, Bruce Wayne is Val Kilmer because he's all flash and big smiles and he's a millionaire and he's schmoozing and he's dealing. And, you know, so I think that Mark Ruffalo is a little bit bulky, and Eric Bana is way too in shape to have been Bruce Banner. So the amount of times that I'm uncomfortable seeing Ed Norton with his shirt off in this movie, that's how you should feel when you see Scrawny. You know, as the Hulk thinks of this person as Puny Banner.
Puny, yes.
So yes, many times he refers to him as Puny Banner. And yes, we get Puny Banner in here. I think he does a reasonably good job, you know, as a guy who's on the run, living on his own. And I was immediately feeling very smart that I'm like, well, clearly this isn't a continuation of the first movie, because he knew Spanish at the end of the first movie, and he's learning a language here. And then I'm like, oh yeah, dummy. In Brazil, they speak Portuguese. So he did have to learn a new language. So my bad. I'm letting everybody know.
And he also knew Spanish when he wound up waking up in a different country, which I like that detail. That was where am I?
And you know, saying things like, don't, you know, you won't like me when I'm hungry. You know, there were some nice jokes. And speaking of the Bill Bixby version, by the way, when he's flipping through the channels very early in the movie, there is a clip of Courtship of Eddie's Father starring Bill Bixby. So anyway, just a little bit of the background that this movie was troubled before they even started filming. And it seems like the problems continued. Now, I started off by asking Michael if he'd ever liked Ed Norton in other movies. His answer was yes. Some of the movies he's in are very good. Now, I have to ask you about someone else in the cast. Have you ever liked Liv Tyler in anything?
Hard no.
Hard no.
Oh
my gosh. Well,
Christian, I know you have an image there that
well, I don't know. Look, I don't know what you're looking for, but I'm just going to say the first time I ever saw Liv Tyler, I was a 17-year-old man, and I felt like she and Alicia Silverstone, you could really feel the chemistry between them in whether it's Amazing, Crying, or Crazy, they're all the same song. And Alicia Silverstone's in all three. One of them has her in it. They do get into the water, and I decided, creepy, due to the uncertainty of the age of the actresses, I was just going to go ahead and grab a still here, keeping in mind I was 17 at the time, so everything was fine. But I literally have no idea how old they were, because as we're talking about it, I'm remembering. Oh yeah,
it's immoral. Is it illegal? That's the question.
For the age I was at the time, that
not
that
at all. No, no, I was a little older than you, so for me,
you were a big creep.
Yeah, no, totally, totally. But enjoying those videos as much as I did, as often as I did, definitely one in the creep factor. But so Michael, if I may ask then. All right. When is Liv Tyler on a disappointed you least?
Oh, wow.
When she moved to London.
There it is. Thank you.
And this is also, this is something that you sent to me, right? Is this from, is she talking to Daredevil there? Who is she with?
Yes, this is Armageddon, the famous... one of the creepiest scenes, and I've seen some creepy, creepy cinema, but this might take a win, place, and show for creep factor. It's Daredevil, still with his, but with his vision, playing seductively with, and they're not necessarily animal cookies. Those are Circus Parade, one of the great cookies seen in many a crafty table in L.A. But
better than a Peak Freen, which is a very serious cookie. This is a little bit better for food play. I see. Yes. You're talking about Armageddon. And of course, that's the movie where John McClane is her father. Now, I'm sorry. I want to let you finish your thought, though, please.
Oh, no. But I saw this in the theater. I saw Armageddon in the theater, and he's playing seductively with the cookies and shoving them places. And she's like, do you think anyone else is doing this? And I, without even a second thought, screamed at the top of my lungs, fuck, I hope not. And, I mean, we also had a fair amount of drinks in us when we saw Armageddon and Space Madness, which is a very real condition. I still suffer from. But that
moment, you still suffer from space madness.
You never recover from space madness. You can only treat it. You can't solve it. So Liv Tyler, I think anytime you cast her and you cast her as someone who then went back for graduate school, you're asking a lot of your audience. Yeah. Even the photos they have of her, like from like work, and she's sitting there and like, I wish I looked that good when I'm teaching.
She had her smart girl glasses on. No, she literally had her smart girl glasses on. I don't know what you're talking
don't
about.
Don't leave again. All right. Oh, that moment.
Well, look, let's be honest. I mean, the prior on-screen version of this character was Jennifer Connelly. So, you know, it's a step down, but is it an entire flight of stairs down? I'll leave that to the audience. She speaks so quietly in every scene that they're
in. And breathy. And,
yeah.
It's just eyes and a mouth. <She's> like...
Yeah,
every gotta, scene is just like.
There might be some other body parts there too, but oh, that's it. But yeah. I noticed a torso in one scene, but yeah, you're right. You're asking us to believe that she worked in a lab.
Oh my God! Teaches. You wouldn't even think she's supposed to be like a scientist. She doesn't seem like she could solve a crossword puzzle. Like, it's just like. Oh my God. Like, I will say, you know, that's probably the most disappointed I've ever been in Jennifer Connelly, like as a performance, but at least she seemed like she was a smart scientist. Like Liv Tyler, she's just like the damsel like trope. It's just like, ugh. Dr. Ross, really? Okay.
They don't have her doing much doctoring. Jennifer Connelly did a lot more doctoring in the prior version. Yeah.
Christian, if I ask you who is the least convincing PhD in the history of cinema, I'm curious if female PhD in the history of cinema.
Oh, okay.
I have an answer for this one, but I'm curious.
I would like to hear your answer because...
That would be Dr. Christmas from James Bond, as played by Denise Richards. Yeah. And remember, they had the line, Christmas came early. It's like I wanted to take a bath with bleach after that line.
Yeah. Well, I think you nailed it, in all honesty. So I think that, this idea of Banner, you know, he's on the run, he's laying low, he's talking to Mr. Blue because, you know, they want to remind us of Reservoir Dogs, I guess. The enduring thing about this in my mind, one of them was always the Stanley cameo where he drinks the gamma radiated soda. And that's one of my favorite Stanley cameos because it's just... you know, he's just like, oh, I'm going to enjoy this. And oh, my God, I'm dead immediately. But I guess the place to start, Michael, what is it about this movie for you? Are there things that you feel do work? Maybe it's just scenes where you're like, OK, this is less bad, or just the whole time. Is it hard to focus on the screen because of the constant eye roll that you can't stop yourself?
Oh man, I don't even know where to start. I do enjoy the beginning of the film, you know, when he's working at the factory. I feel like that's honestly probably the best part of the film.
Like the X-Men movie where Magneto's working in a factory. You know, when our superpowered characters are on the run working in factories.
Yeah.
I'd spend an hour just there at the factory. Yeah.
It's much more slick than the original one. It's more Hollywood. But I feel like it also suffers from some of the same problems. It's just all very kind of confusing. It's not very cohesive. Like, it doesn't flow. It doesn't have, like, you know, like a typical, like, arc of, like, how films are made. Things just seem like some things are too long. Some things are too short. Like, it all building up to this, like, kind of anticlimactic endings fight scene. Like, I don't know. I could buy Eric Bana as the Hulk. Like, even, you know, when you look at the faces of, like, the Hulk with, like, Mark Ruffalo and Eric Bana, you can see just, like, a tinge of like, oh, that was that person. I don't see the Hulk in Ed Norton like at all. I don't see like it feels like two completely different characters. Like Banner and the Hulk just seem like complete, like they're just so far apart when Edward Norton plays him. But I can feel, you know, Mark Ruffalo in the Hulk, and I can feel Eric Bana in the Hulk. Like they just, it seems just kind of like they're just two completely different characters. And I just, him and Liv Tyler just completely take me out of it. Like I can't fully buy it. I can't believe it. Like it feels like I'm watching a play. Like it doesn't feel like I'm watching a real story.
Right. I think I think I definitely see what you're getting at. And the on-screen pairing isn't great. And I think it's a different approach to the Hulk. I agree that Mark Ruffalo, even in the earlier iterations, like basically when he's in just the first Avengers, you do feel like the focus is on them being the same. And then they did that with Eric Bana. But just again, to say that this is a little bit of a callback to the TV show, you did feel like they were very separate because they were, of course, played by different actors, you know? And you could do that when you didn't have the advent of, you know, CGI Hulk jumping around rooftops and stuff. But what do you think about sort of this separation of Banner and the Hulk for you, Eric?
It's a really good point you're making, Michael, because you're right. It's like, it's almost like Banner's gone, Hulk appears. And what they really finally pulled off with Mark Ruffalo was you did feel the spirit of both alive in both forms. And you know, and also too, the CG got smarter, the way they filmed him got smarter. I mean, it's almost like they had two trials and lots of errors before they finally kind of landed. I mean, really, the moment in Avengers when I'm always angry and he punches out that ship, like, that is one of the great moments in not just, like, comic book cinema, but, like, action cinema, blockbuster cinema. I mean, that's the moment that's going to play 20 years, 40 years from now. And it is because we completely buy into it as well. I think Edward Norton's really, I mean, he's a really, of course, talented actor. I'm not saying anything shocking there. He's really good in those early scenes, actually. Like you're saying, you know, when he's in Brazil and working at the factory. And I actually like the action set piece at the beginning, although a little too much violence to dogs for my taste. Maybe not you two, but for me, a little much.
Well, I just thought that they were trying to make up for the Hulk dogs in the previous Hulk film. And then
he literally turned to dust.
Yeah.
But that's a really good set piece, actually. That's
you're talking about when they're still in Brazil and they're trying to find him. Yeah, I think that is laid out well. And I think that works. I'm not entirely disagreeing with Michael in that the film starts to unravel the more screen time Ed Norton has with Liv Tyler. You know, we're not talking Natalie Portman, Hayden Christensen chemistry, but you know, they're pretty close in all honesty. You know, I mean, the dialogue might be a tad better written here, but we can agree to disagree on another show if need be. Let's talk about Tim Roth as Abomination and pre-Abomination, where he's just like, yeah, I just want to shoot stuff and punch stuff and all that. I think seeing this again reminded me that I did like the fact that he showed up as Emil on She-Hulk. You know, I like that they sort of kept that part as canon. That he still plays Abomination. Who knows? Maybe we'll see him again. I'll ask you first, Eric, what you think of Tim Roth. Speaking of Reservoir Dogs,
Tim Roth almost walks away with the film. I mean, like he shows up for me, and I'm not necessarily crazy about where they go with Abomination towards the end. I mean, it's an inevitable, yes, a big fight in the middle of Yonge Street in Toronto.
Didn't you see the Apollo Theater? That was in Harlem.
I love that. Right.
That's in Harlem.
It's not only about what you put up, it's also in productions on what you take down. And that one music store is one of Yonge Street's most recognizable storefronts. So it's like, okay, yeah. Oh, obviously, you know.
Well, the Apollo was there.
The Apollo is there. So,
you're missing the point, Eric.
Yeah, no, I get the point. The point is, of course, you know, how are they going to say it's Bronx is that, but then, or Harlem is that, but then in fact, it's so clearly not.
My interjection is my favorite one of those, because you mentioned the Bronx, is the Jackie Chan movie Rumble in the Bronx, which is so
with the mountain range.
There's a mountain range behind the skyline. So it's like, oh, this is the outer boroughs of New York, you know, somewhere around Vancouver. But anyway,
you go across 125th Street, New York looks really different.
I do feel like Tim Roth works fairly well. I'm going to compare him to Colin Farrell in Daredevil, because it's a similar approach. It's not entirely dissimilar character, and he pulls it off way better. I'm not comparing him to Magneto, you know, him to some of the,
but he's also not playing it that way. I think what's really interesting about him is he does come off like a soldier, and Tim Roth, by the way, you know, they talk him up, and then Tim Roth is not a very big guy. He doesn't have necessarily a massive physical presence, but he really does command the screen quite well. And I think, you know, he holds his own with everyone. I mean, you got Ed Norton in there and William Hurt, and Tim Roth is maybe the most interesting of all three at times. And, you know, I don't know if you saw Rob Roy, but that was the one time he was up for an Oscar, and he played the villain in that, and he's incredible in it. And so I think, considering, like, if you just looked at him, you wouldn't necessarily think, well, this guy is going to put fear in me. And yet when he shows up, he very much takes over the storytelling. Even before he gets the super serum, he just has that attitude that you need to make us believe he actually has a shot against the Hulk.
So, Michael, I want to get your thoughts on Tim Roth. Go ahead.
I would say he's a rough 39, because, like, you're looking at 38 right here, and I'm just like, really? He was.
They even had that line in there, right? It's like 46, 39.
Yeah.
That's tough living, soldier, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
I did like that, actually. Yeah. There are a couple moments. There's a few things like that. There are things that you're like, yeah, that's kind of funny. But your thoughts, Michael?
I don't like the part when he's like, having withdrawals, and he's talking to, like, leader, like you got to make me, you know, like a Hulk. That's kind of awkward for me. I feel like his presence on She-Hulk is very different. He's a lot more charismatic. It almost feels like a different character to me.
Yeah.
He's giving me kind of like Baron Zemo vibes in She-Hulk, whereas in this, you know, he's not like funny at all, or trying to be, you know. It's okay. I think it's kind of a easy go-to thing to, like, make him be the first villain, because it's like, oh, he's so similar to Hulk, like the Abomination, like, I really wanted more leader out of this movie. And Mr. Blue, they should have called him Mr. Orange, because we all know the leader wears orange. I don't get it. I don't know.
That's a great call. And I forgot. I mean, obviously, in the moment, seeing this in the theater back then, and I've seen it. I own it on standard def DVD. Who's jealous? So I have watched it more than once. But probably this might have been at the very most. This was the fourth time I watched it. Might have even been the third. Jeez. And I had forgotten about sort of the leader we never got, a character we've never got. Because, look, Kevin Feige, Marvel Studios are not interested in telling standalone Hulk stories because of the arrangement they would have to cut in Universal. And they're like, no, we'll just put him in Ragnarok. We'll just do other stuff with him. We'll have She-Hulk on TV, you know. So we haven't really had a Hulk story since this one, you know. I mean, so it has been 15 years, and I'm sure that Kevin Feige knows at some point when they might be able to, like, when would the rights come back, you know, like how Marvel was able to get Daredevil back because it wasn't worth it to Fox to try and reboot it, you know. So I think that there's a little bit more room to maneuver But I wonder if we'll ever get a proper Hulk movie ever again. You know, I mean, I think that they feel like he kind of works well, you know, in this role, and you know, the Mark Ruffalo version of the Hulk works more as an ensemble, you know. But I'd certainly be up for it if they were going to make a movie. I think that there's a little bit of humor throughout. Apparently, one of the moments that is in the earliest draft of the script is Bruce realizing that he can't get too excited, so he can never have sex. And that's the biggest tragedy of this whole thing. The fact that Banner's like always, it's like, no, I gotta calm down, you know? So I thought it was a funny moment, especially because he's like, yeah, I can't get too excited. And Betty's like, not even a little. he's like, no. Get your finger out of there. No. We can't even go a little. That was for Michael. I knew that would make you boys laugh. All right.
You want to go see Beetlejuice the musical?
Oh my God, that's so funny. That's actually playing here in Memphis on Halloween, and my friend was at the Orpheum. Yeah. And he was like, "Do you want to go?" And I was like, "No."
Would you go with Lauren Boebert? Don't answer.
Oh, never.
So let's give a quick shout out to Ty Burrell, who most people know as Phil Dunphy from Modern Family. As you know, look, a lot of these superhero relationships do need the cuck boyfriend who gets walked all over. But there's the important scene where it's like, oh, he called Ross, so we're okay to not like him. You know, it's perfectly fine that we don't like him. But I had forgotten he was in it for a brief moment, and I was like, oh yeah, there he is, you know.
I love how he just kind of like as soon as Banner comes back, he's just kind of like, whatever, you can have her.
Yeah,
he doesn't fight for her at all. I wouldn't either.
Yeah, I'm gonna go. Yeah, I'm gonna go see what Alicia Silverstone is up to.
Kiss me in the rain.
And you know, so he is basically the role that often goes to James Marsden in these movies. You know, yes, you might think Cyclops, but don't forget he also played J. Jonah Jameson's son. You know, who Mary Jane was dating. But come on, you know,
he's the most cuckolded actor in Hollywood, actually, I believe. James Marsden. I mean, he has done that role so many times.
Yeah, but he's so good at it. You know
he's
what I mean?
He's the perfect other guy.
Yeah,
you guys seen Jury Duty? Because he's amazing in Jury Duty.
You mean not the Pauly Shore classic?
No, the freebie.
Of course, we've seen. Yeah.
One of the questions I wanted to ask you guys is, as I was watching this, and I thought it a little bit in the previous, the Ang Lee version we watched, is Thunderbolt Ross a worse father or a worse general? I don't have the immediate answer because I want to say father. But he's a really bad general, too. And I'm not sure. I would like people in the chat to tell us if they have a strong opinion. He's really not good at anything is kind of what I'm getting at, you know. But
his mustache upkeep is solid, though. I mean, yeah. I think groomers go, he's fine.
Maybe when Harrison Ford takes over, he's going to be a good general and a good father, except you know we're not going to see Betty. You know, I mean, we have, you know, and in my mind, I always want to call her Betsy Ross because I feel like that's
me too.
Yeah. Right. But yeah. So what it comes down to is that I think that the Hulk scenes are good. And, you know, to Eric's point that by Avengers, they'd really gotten a handle on the CG and how to make it work. And obviously you have a few more years because Avengers actually is 2011. So, you know, they get a couple more years in. I think that they learned a lot from the previous version. And I think that in a lot of ways, this Hulk does move better. He looks a little bit less cartoony to me. And if you want an example for how far technology advanced in this time, in the previous Hulk movie, Betty has some developed photos from the local pharmacy where she had photos printed out from film. And in this one, she has a digital camera. Well, by the time we get to 2011, you know, there's iPhones. So, you know, this is how you like, how were people consuming their holiday snaps if they were? I think that tells us everything we need to know. But I found this to be much more watchable and more of a movie and something I was much more entertained in and had fun watching than the Ang Lee Hulk movie. Michael, I believe you do not share my opinion.
No. I'll take the first one.
Yeah, but really? I just encapsulate briefly what it is about the first one. And you can restate Ed Norton and or Liv Tyler, but give us one other thing about the original one that makes it better.
The emotion. There's just not, like, Jennifer Connelly and Eric Banner seem really torn up about what's going on in the first one. And in this one, it's kind of like they're like kind of like whatever, like this is life. Like it's just I expect more like outrage than like all movie. You know, it's the emotion for me, for sure.
Well, obviously, Craig Robinson is a man of discerning tastes, always staying up late in the UK for our show. And he said Banna seemed more volatile, so I'll go with him. But for the triumvirate here on the show, Eric, we are deadlocked. You need to cast the tie-breaking vote. You are the president of the Senate who has to weigh in and break the deadlock. Please don't filibuster. Let us know which one you prefer.
I declare a vote of no confidence for Christian Diem. No. I love my Michael Shirley dearly. I do. I don't understand how you could think the old Hulk had more of anything except madness.
Nick Nolte,
right. The one thing I would say the original Hulk has that no moment in this movie came close to was Nick Nolte with that power cord biting it. That is the greatest stupid moment in any Marvel movie ever. Great. And it is such a level of lunacy that I'm stunned anyone allowed that to happen. Any producer on set didn't pull Angus Ivory. Really? But like, seriously, man? Like, weren't you up for an Oscar? It is so many moments like that, though. The first one, it was dull, and the Hulk looked doughy, right? The effects were bad. The storytelling was bad. It was maddening at times. This one, at least I thought, had a touch of an emotional through line. Where the problem, I think, really kicks in, because I was thinking about, all right, would this movie work? Like, as I'm watching this, because I've seen it a few times, like, would it work better? You know, would it be a good film? It's pretty good for my taste. Would it be a good film if it was Mark Ruffalo and, I don't know, any other actress in the world playing Dr. Ross, including myself in a wig.
Paris Hilton. Yeah.
Me in a wig. Drew Barrymore's publicist. Whoever it is. Like, anyone.
Pam Anderson, fresh off the set of Barbed Wire.
Pamela Anderson, you mean?
Pamela Anderson.
I mean, that's the problem here. But I realized in watching it too. I what you said, Christian, about once we get out of Brazil, because the stuff in Brazil is actually pretty good. It's actually good, solid Hulk storytelling, for my opinion. It reminded me a bit of the old show. It has a touch of that Fugitive feel, which also the Hulk had.
And just to press pause on the Eric Connor button when he leaves Brazil and before he wakes up in another country, that is he wakes up in Guatemala. You do hear the Lonely Man,
of course,
the theme from the end credits for the TV show The Hulk, which stay tuned because we will be talking about it momentarily. But I just wanted to mention it did have that end of an episode of the Hulk TV show followed by that,
right?
And then the next couple episodes weren't as well done as that part. I definitely agree that that's the best part of this movie. I think we're all in agreement on that. Whatever we think of the movie as a whole, that part does work the best.
And then like Ed Norton, even like actually one of the moments I really enjoyed in his performance was actually him waking up after hulking out and returning normal. And he's like, he's a mess and I'm completely buying into it. Like how scary it must be. Like, I mean, this is why you need like an actor like to play this role. With, you know, Bill Bixby was, you know, such a believable kind of regular human, because to wake up after that, I mean, it's like being on the worst bender of all time. You're in a different country.
Are we talking about Nick Nolte again? I'm confused.
We're talking about Nick. We're talking sophomore year me. We all have our stories of this, right? But I think like that's where Ed Norton really shines in this. But the stuff with Betty doesn't really work. And then the final battle on Yonge Street in Toronto, right? It lacks the sort of like, I don't know, like the Avengers finale, which that final fight scene's terrific.
Agreed.
Very well staged.
I agree with you. Yeah.
And I don't think the last battle is. I think it has its moments before it really kicks in. But once it kicks in, you know, and this is a problem a lot of Marvel movies fall into, is like the sort of video game feel of the finale. And I think, unfortunately, this one very much has that problem. It feels just, it's big, but I'm not feeling much of the sense of like this sort of tension that should be in a good action scene. So it kind of, the ending just feels like it kind of peters out, even though they're spending so much money on destruction.
Yeah. By Peter, do you mean Andrew Garfield?
I remember, no, I'm talking the guy from the Electric Company who used to play Peter.
Oh yes, right. Of course. So, there's a moment. I'm going over my notes before we finish this up, and one of the things that I jotted down, clearly thinking along the same lines you guys were, Ed Norton at one point. It's like, you know, it's like when we signed up for those induced hallucinations experiments when we were at Harvard. I'm like, they both went to Harvard, like to get like the Harvard, or is this another school that I'm not thinking of? The decision to take a cab instead of the subway, I thought was actually kind of funny. You know, me in a metal tube in the most hostile city in the world, let's get a cab. And then the driver drives so crazy. She's the one, you know, who calls him an asshole. And, you know, I thought that was probably the moment that worked the best of the two of them, is because, you know, she was allowed to act in her range, which is, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, can you give me a 12? You know, and, you know, I thought that there was, you know, we got some moments that we wanted, you know, like when.
Did we?
Well, no. Well, because here's what it is. Like Brodsky's saying, you know, any last words, Ross? And that's the first time we hear him say Hulk smash. He doesn't want to wear the purple pants. And then the school reporter had the name Jack McGee, who is the reporter from the TV show. But yeah, I mean, we're just getting things. As we finish up our conversation on this movie, I do want to talk a little bit about the legacy. Now, this was also sent to me by Mr. Connor. Kevin Feige, this is announcing prior to the Avengers, we've made the decision to not bring Ed Norton back to portray the title role of Bruce Banner in the Avengers. Our decision is definitely not one based on monetary factors, but instead rooted in the need for an actor who embodies the creativity and collaborative spirit of our other talented cast members.
Burn.
Yeah, that is some straight fire from Feige. I'm sorry.
It's like he's an asshole. Like, well, without
saying
it. That's
kind of what they're saying, and it's not the first time that maybe I heard this. The Avengers demands players who thrive working as part of an ensemble, as evidenced by Robert Downey Jr., Chris Hemsworth, Chris Evans. Scarlett Johansson, and boy, I'm blanking on Samuel Jackson. I'm thinking of the other Avenger, Samuel L. And all of our talented cast. We are looking to announce a name actor who fulfills these requirements and is passionate about the iconic role in the coming weeks, and may or may not have been in 13 going on 30 with Elektra. We will announce officially. But yeah, I think that's what they're saying, is like, he's not playing nice. And he's not the guy that you want to try and work with. So I think that I think it was important that they move on, but that we still get the Hulk. And I don't know. I think that he works really well. I'm talking about Mark Ruffalo. I think that I do like him as the mm-hmm. Hulk. I've become very, I've grown accustomed to his face, as they say. And I feel like it's going pretty well. And hopefully we get more of him. You know, we got to see him in She-Hulk.
Well, I have a feeling he's going to be a really, really big part of Captain America Brave New World, because I was really shocked looking in the comments that Daniel Drew didn't know this. Liv Tyler is going to be in Captain America Brave New World. Leader is going to be in Captain America Brave New World. For me, it seems like this is going to be a way of skirting Universal and making a Hulk movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Again.
Oh, so basically, they're James Marsden-ing Universal so that they can just kind of sit and watch what happens. Yeah.
Yeah. Because everyone loves, I mean, I think it's pretty undisputable. Everybody loves Mark Ruffalo as the Hulk. I think a lot of people are kind of iffy about having a new Captain America. I am really, really, I don't know if interested is the right word, but I'm very curious to see how Liv Tyler works with Mark Ruffalo as...
I'm stunned that they're bringing her back, though.
I am too.
I don't get that choice. I mean, unless they're just bringing her back to kill her, you know, for one scene and then, you know, make Michael Shirley happy. But it feels like they've given... It makes no sense because they freed themselves from having to use her. She's clearly not, like, anywhere near what that role needs. So why would they go back to her? I mean, does she have pictures of someone?
Michael, you're not a fan, but the one thing you dislike more than anything else that you say on the show is recasting.
All right.
So you have to at least appreciate their consistency.
I'd be okay if they had Jennifer Connelly come and replace her. I would forgive that.
Here's my guess. She said no.
Yeah.
I don't know how we didn't talk about this at the time, because this is from Hollywood Reporter back in March of this year. And, you know, maybe we did talk about it and I'm just getting old. Mm-hmm. But Hollywood Reporter definitely says that Liv Tyler returns to Marvel for Captain America 4. So, she'll be there. Anyway, so if you haven't had enough Hulk talk, have we got something in store for you next week? Right here at the show, we'll be at the top of the hour, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. We will be joined by Kenneth Johnson, who likes to be called Kenny. Kenny Johnson, who I did a very in-depth conversation right here on Geekscape about him being the creator, writer, director of the original miniseries V, which just celebrated its 40th anniversary. But prior to that, not only did he do the Bionic Woman, he also did the Incredible Hulk TV series, which we've talked a lot about this week. And we will be talking to Kenny next week in the same time slot, talking about episodes of the Incredible Hulk. And the fact that he was not involved in the sequel movies that were done by New World Entertainment in the 80s, which I remember watching those first run. The old Hulk show I would see in reruns, and I definitely saw some of it, but it wasn't as superhero-y as I think I wanted as a kid. But we'll take a look at some select episodes, and we'll talk to Kenny about the process of getting that show on the air. And, you know, I mean, it was a big success for Marvel. It was really their first live action success, unless I'm missing something. They did okay with animation, but this was a first for them, the 70s Hulk. So we will talk about that next week on this show. Prior to that, Eric and myself and Garrett Briones from here at Geekscape on Friday will be talking about Secret Invasion, the comics, over on the Geekscape Book Club. So you'll find that at 6:30 Eastern, 3:30 Pacific, bringing the show back after a little summer hiatus. And you can find that there. That's all in the future. In the interim, Eric, where can you be found?
Hi, everyone. I can be found at Count Eric Connor over on Instagram, and I think I'm on Threads, whatever the other thing's called, and Twitter, X, Shirley as well.
Exactly. And Michael, where can you be found?
The farthest place away from Liv Tyler. And on Twitter, and Michael X Shirley, and for the time being, I got to see what Elon's going to charge. And I saw this really great tweet that's like, I don't know if I really want to be on Twitter with only people that pay for Twitter. That I don't know. But also, you can find me on Instagram where I'm much more active. Stories are always pretty lit at I Hate Michael Shirley.
I agree. The stories are usually pretty lit. Not as not as lit as the X account of the son of a former president were earlier today, but still pretty lit, I have to admit. But you know, we all have things that we can try to achieve, and that's great. You can find me Twitter, Instagram. At Christian DMZ, but who knows how long you'll be able to find me on X over there. If I got to start paying, then boy, you'll hear me talking about Threads a lot. Maybe I'll even dust off the Facebook account.
It's not about the money to me. It's about
it is like, for me. That... It's 100% about the money for me.
You're stingier than I am. True. But it's more about like, what does that mean the content's going to be like if people are paying to push content?
Yeah. In my opinion. Yeah. Well, well, that's all the time we have for now. I have to be moving on, and we can't stay. And I would play the Lonely Man theme from The Incredible Hulk right now, but I don't want to do anything that that will catch the attention of YouTube. I don't want to get my pals at Geekscape in any kind of trouble. But we will just say so long. See you on Friday for the Geekscape Book Club on Secret Invasion. And then right back here next Wednesday, talking Incredible Hulk with Kenny Johnson. That's all the time we have for now, brother. As the great Stan Lee would say, Excelsior!
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.